I'd like to introduce our speaker today, who will speak until 10:10 and will then answer any questions from the audience. Let's all welcome Sue from Tustin.
I'm Sue from Tustin. Moved up here about 3 years ago, and before I got here, I looked up the meetings on the internet, and I do that when I move. And I'm a runner. You pick a city, you pick a state. I've lived there, and so I went to a meeting before we even moved up here, and I went to a Wednesday night meeting, and I was so intimidated. That intimidation that I feel today, so intimidated. You know, I was telling Mary, you know, I'm real comfortable. Most of my service work has been done in mental health institutions with the barbed wire around it. Felt real comfortable doing that. And I went into the jails a lot with panels and felt comfortable in jail. And those women would share with me their stories, and I thought, wow, you know, I've done everything they've done. Some of them a lot more than they've done, but I was never incarcerated. You know, how does that happen? You know, I never got a DUI. I know how that happened because, you see, when I'm drunk, I couldn't get the key in. It would always be upside down or something, and I'd end up passing out in the car, or I'd have probably got jailed for DUI too, so. So how do I stay sober today? I came into this program about 22 years ago, and I've got almost 19 years sobriety. And this is how I stay sober. I breathe. Some days I don't breathe very well. And I put one foot in front of the other, just like going to the zoo. One foot in front of the other, and the next thing you know, 24 hours has gone by. When I first got sober, you know, I was told I couldn't do what I wanted to do anymore. I couldn't have what I wanted to have anymore. And my maturity level at sobriety date, which was September 3rd, 94, my maturity level was probably about a four-year-old. And I had started numbing myself from the time I was five. So I was a mess. Without alcohol in my system, you know, my temper tantrums were like totally out of control. I've got a four-year-old granddaughter at home who, it's like when she's mad, you know it. And I don't know how the door's still hanging on her bedroom, but it's there. All the grandparents on both sides of the family, plus a whole lot of siblings and uncles, were all alcoholics, you know. I have three little granddaughters. It's like, pick one. I'm saving some seats. I love this program. Love it. I was about almost 6 years sober before a newcomer would walk in the room, and I would be thrilled, and I would go up and share and encourage them to stay. Before that, all I wanted to do was tell that newcomer to run. Because, see, I started coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I came to meetings for 5 years drinking. I drank after the meetings, though, because you told me to be classy about it. So, it was so hard. My first year was real easy because I worked and went to my bedroom and worked and went to my bedroom, and I didn't have much stress. But I stayed sober. You know. Didn't come out of that room very often. Second year of sobriety, I came out of the room and life got really rough, really rough. And I hurt. That first 5 years of sobriety, man, I hurt so bad. I couldn't do anything. And I thought, every Thursday night I went to this meeting. I still hate that woman. And she would give the same little spiel every week, and then she'd kind of give a little update of what she'd been doing. She had a stable mood, always the same, loving and kind, stable. None of this, you know, way up there and way down there. And at the very end of her little speech every week, she'd say, I hate her. If it never gets any better than this, I'll be okay. And I would leave that meeting and I'd think, it had better get better than this. It had really better get better than this pretty fast because I'm just barely hanging in here. And I was living in a sobriety house with my sister, my brother-in-law, who had about 15 years, 16 years sober. I had plenty of support around me. But life was hell, you know? I would go to work, and a lot of times I'd make it till about noon and then quit. I had a lot of jobs those first few years. I ran away a lot. I finally managed to get a pretty good job that was paying a little bit, so I rent me this little apartment. I'm probably about 3 years sober now, and I thought, I have arrived. I can function. I'm out there by myself. So I get all my stuff moved in, and I went to lay down, you know, and go to sleep at night, and these huge-ass cockroaches, they're about this big, they started falling. And I'm looking around, I thought, oh my God. So I got my stuff and got my car, and I went back to my little safe, sober house with my sister. And then the next time I ran away to Yellowstone Park, you know, I'd had it. I couldn't take this pain anymore. So I went up to Yellowstone. By now, I've upgraded my four-year-old maturity level to about 16, 17. So I go to Yellowstone and fall madly in love. What a riot. And then one day, we're walking through the park. You know how they say you'll meet somebody that's on the same level? So we're walking through the park, and the tag of his clothes is kind of hanging out. He's got his name written in his jacket. And I'd been around a little. I knew what that meant. One of the perks of that Yellowstone job was they gave you, see the kind of employees they get? We got free therapy. And they would bring these therapists in, so I signed up immediately, you know, I'll take anything free. And I like therapists anyway. I got a lot of outside help for, I'm an alcoholic with mental illness, and I'm not crazy anymore. And I'm an alcoholic, and I don't drink anymore. But I still have all those things, you know? And they're waiting. They're just sitting there waiting. So anyway, I'm going to this therapist, and I probably had known this guy for about 2 weeks, and I said, you know, I'm ready to get married here. I couldn't get married. I was already married. But I'm ready to sail off into the sunset with this guy, you know, and hook up forever. He goes, how long have you known him? I said, oh, a couple of weeks. He says, maybe you should slow down a little bit. So that's who I was. I'm not that person anymore. And I thank you for that. I qualify. I had a son and a daughter. I have a son and a daughter. My little girl was 12, and I was living in Alaska. This was prior to Alcoholics Anonymous. And we'd walk down to the grocery store. I was going to get some groceries. And it was pretty cold out. It was probably about 20 below, and which was, we'd gotten used to it. That was walking weather. And so they have liquor stores up there that minors can't go into. Only grown-ups can go to the liquor store. And so I told her, you know, she was used to the drill. I said, you wait here, I'm going to run in. She started crying. Now she's making a scene in front of the liquor store. And she screamed, please, Mama, begging. You know, please, Mama. And don't buy it. And I got so furious. You know, everybody's starting to look. By this time, they know I'm a drunk. I told her to F off. If she didn't like the way I was raising her, she could just go home and pack her bags. I remember the words exactly. They're like imprinted in your brain. You don't forget stuff like that. So if she didn't like where she's living, go home, pack up and leave. And she ran up the street and went home. And I didn't care. I went in and got my bottle. I got my groceries. I went home. Drank some of it on the way home. I can't even finish the story. I don't know if she was home or not. So a lot of times I can't finish the story. I don't know where she was. You know? I drank really heavy before, during, and after when I was having her. And I have no clue where she was when she was a newborn. You know, a mom that's passed out on the couch doesn't hear a newborn cry. I don't know if maybe... I married a man just like me that had mental illness and was an alcoholic. I don't know if he was passed out. Maybe he took care of her. I don't know. I don't know. I know she has a lot of the pain left over. And it's so exciting because she doesn't do a program. She's not an alcoholic. She has her own stuff. And I get to share this program. See, you've probably noticed, but Alcoholics Anonymous has this lingo, this language thing. I hate that. People just talk English. You know, I don't want to hear a little lingo. So I translate all the lingo into, like, real words that people use. And I've shared this program with her. And you should see her. Sometimes I'll say something. Well, I have a problem. I live with my family, my son-in-law and my daughter and my three beautiful grandchildren. And we'll be having an issue about something. And I'll share something that I've heard in these rooms that have helped me and taught me how to live. She'll go, oh, that's so awesome. And she'll start doing it. And we've solved more problems that way, you know. Family problems. See, what we did in our family, I don't know about yours, but this is how our family worked. We would have an issue with somebody, or one of the family members would do something. That's it. They're gone. You know, scratch them out of the phone book. They don't come back to dinner. Mm-mm. Gone. Well, we got down to, like, there was her and me and pizza. And that doesn't work very well. One of the exciting things that happened to me is that I never had the opportunity to do any kind of a I'm sorry to my husband. We were married almost 40 years. And we didn't always live together. Probably in that 40 years, we only lived together 20 of it. And I always wanted to. I wanted to sit down and talk to him and tell him what my side of the street was. But I couldn't. It wasn't safe. So I married a man who liked to rearrange my face a little bit. And if he was having a bad day, you know, I was his way of getting rid of his anxiety. And so, but I never got to do that. And the program is awesome. If you're doing your little I'm sorry things, and you have people in your life that it isn't going to work out, it will. Just wait. It will. I had the opportunity to go to his funeral. This has been about 3 or 4 years ago. I went with my daughter. It was so awesome. There was so much peace in that room. See, that man that was so tortured. And I never had to go through forgiveness with him because I had always forgiven him. I knew that he had the same pain I had. And I knew he was being tortured. And he was at peace. He was no longer being tortured. And to be able to stand there with my daughter and have this family unit be okay was awesome. And then we went over to the relative's house. I had a brother-in-law and a sister that always called me. This is after 40 years of marriage. I was the other woman. 40 years later, you know, they go, hi, other woman. It's like, how long you have to be in this family? And my daughter laughs. She goes, she still doesn't know your name. Anyway, I was able to go over there, and some relatives came down. And we sat around. We talked about old times. And my other sister-in-law from Oregon, we talked about all our drinking years, you know, how much fun it was. God, we had fun, you know. We'd get drunk at their house, at my brother-in-law and sister-in-law's house. We'd get drunk. We'd pass out. We'd wet the bed. Her husband liked to rearrange her face. So one or the other of us would get beat up, and then we'd watch the kids cry. God, it was fun, you know? It was all those things I didn't want to give up when I got here, you know? My one little nephew that cried so much when we were getting beat up and life was chaotic, sold marijuana at school when he was a junior in high school and made a lot of money. He was selling oregano. And the kids found out. And then he made so much money selling that it was buried all over the house because he couldn't spend it. You know, you spend it, you get in trouble. They want to know where you got the new Mercedes. And he died of a heroin about when he was 50. That's what I did to my children. That's what they did to their children. See, we don't get second generation alcoholism for no reason at all. We have to work hard at it. And I have a little relative right now that just scares me all to pieces, you know. Marine Corps sent him to rehab when he was 19, or he was almost 20. Well, then he gets his first DUI at 21. I thought, well, he'd been to rehab, and it cost like $30,000. And then he was an alcoholic for about 10 years and didn't drink. So I can't drink, I'm an alcoholic. And then he drinks, you know, and then he gets in trouble. Well, right now we're on the, I don't think I'm an alcoholic. And he's living in a foreign country, can you believe it? Just scaring the bejesus out of me, you know? I don't think you're supposed to get drunk and disorderly in third world countries. Anyway, I've turned that one over, and I share this today because it makes it easier, you know? I've been taught, every Thursday night I get taught I'm not God. I got to remember that. I always think I am. I think that if I worry about something enough, or if I fuss about it or talk about it, that it'll all go away. And that's not how it works. So, anyway, whatever happens, happens. And then here's the funny one. You know, I was talking about in the family because we talked to them all through Christmas and New Year's. We says, well, I don't think they're drinking again, you know? They sounded really good. And there's like a 13-hour time zone difference here. So it's like midnight when they call us in the morning. I thought, well, New Year's Eve, it's midnight. They ought to be drunk. And they were sober. So we're thinking, whoa, it's over. You know, he's back on the, I guess I'm an alcoholic thing. Then we go on Facebook. And the latest picture is beautiful crystal glass of beer. Sitting right there like Big Bird. So anyway... So anyway, I'll turn that one over, and you know, and once again, I'm back to I can't have what I want when I want it, and life's good. It'll happen the way I guess it's supposed to happen. I have a hard time with that, you know, because I don't want anything bad to happen, but that's okay. It will all work out. Some of the things I do today to stay sober has gotten really easy. When I first got here, I don't know about you when you're new, if this is how you're feeling, but this was so complicated. You know, when I came in here, I couldn't even read. Last year was the first book I read since sobriety. I'm finally able to read again. And then you want me to read a big book? I don't think so. Should I had to look at magazines because they had pictures in them. And some of the things I do to stay sober is I make the program just as simple as I can because after a while it gets really simple. It would have been simple in the beginning if I hadn't complicated it so much. But I needed to understand everything that was happening. And why are you doing that? When I reached that point in my sobriety where I just accepted what is, you know, it got real easy, real simple. I get up in the morning and I'm thankful, even when I don't want to be thankful. If my tire goes flat, I'm thankful. If my car gets wrecked, I'm thankful. I'm just thankful. I don't know, you know, it's not for me to judge that tire going flat's a good or a bad thing. It's just what is. So I stay thankful. Thank you. And I go to meetings. I go to as many meetings as it takes. I don't have a number, but I don't miss a week. And sometimes I go to a whole lot of meetings, and sometimes I get so busy that I skip a few. Skipping a few makes my mood start popping around like popcorn again. And I think, why are you doing this to yourself? What, an hour meeting? That's going to just... Yeah, but it happens, you know. You told me not too long ago, you know, don't let the life that Alcoholics Anonymous has given you take your program away from you. And I forget that sometimes, you know. When I got here, I didn't have a thing to do. My first, this lady named Jane came up and told me she was my sponsor. And I told her that I was here. There was no way I was ever going to quit drinking. Not in her lifetime or mine. I was going to my grave drunk. And I had called this man on the hotline number in the phone book. And I said, I had told him, I'm telling her all this, you know. I said, give me the address. I need the address of a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. One that I can go to and drink, because I'm not going to quit drinking ever. And he gave me an address. And I couldn't believe it. And he said, you know, he said, Alcoholics Anonymous isn't about drinking. It's about living. And he said, you go to this meeting. He said, don't drink before the meeting. Drink after the meeting. And tell them you're an alcoholic. And that worked. And that Jane lady decided she would be my sponsor. And she said, after I had explained I wasn't going to quit drinking, she said, well, then you need to say I'm Sue. I'm an alcoholic and I have a desire to quit drinking. I said, I don't have a desire to quit drinking. I've already explained. I was really hot and angry back then. I said, I've already explained it to you. He said I could come here and I'm not going to quit drinking. She said, well, could you say this? She said, could you say that you have a desire to have a desire? I said, sure. You know, that's safe. I can say that. So that was me for a long time. I had a desire to have a desire. And the magic happened one day. I had 5 years of total freedom, and this program worked. I came into this program to get rid of that husband because I couldn't do it by myself. And I didn't have any more plans. And you helped me. You helped me grow up. You helped me. You gave me the capability of saying no. When I got here, I couldn't say no. You said jump, I'd say how high. And today I can say no, I can say yes, I can say maybe. And those are awesome things you gave me. When I got here, I couldn't eat in a restaurant. I would get all my food to go. I'd go to an AA meeting and take my donut out to the car. I couldn't even eat the donut in the room. Today I can go have two donuts and chop them down right here. And I can go into a restaurant, I can order a complete meal, I can sit and enjoy it, I can pay for it, and I can leave. Those are miracles for this alcoholic. You know, I was that housewife that hid in her house for 20 years, only went out to get another bottle. And today I don't hide anymore. Today I don't hide anymore. My daughter lets me babysit her grandchildren, my grandchildren. Can you believe that? This little girl who had a drunken mother for all her life. Trust me to keep her children. And that one blows me away every day. Another one that blows me away, five minutes after 11, it's Sunday, and I haven't had a drink. And I always, every day, that just blows me away. I'll look at the clock and I'll think, 10:15, Monday morning, I haven't had a drink. That's unreal. I will never, ever take that one for granted. Because not drinking wasn't my idea. It was a byproduct of all these meetings, and it was a byproduct of the higher power. And I have the same higher power I came in here with. I have the same higher power I've had all my life. It's just that I trust it now. I trust that higher power today. And, I just went completely blank. When I was new, service work, Service work saved my life. Today's service work saves my life. As long as I'm doing for others, I don't have to think about me. And most days, all I think about is me. Me, and why are they so mean? It's all about me. It always will be about me. And service work takes me out of that. I think I'm done because my mind keeps stopping. I'm no longer intimidated at my Wednesday night meeting. I love it. That took a long time. I hated that meeting. I didn't want to go back. I knew that I was supposed to be there because that was the meeting that that higher power picked out of that little book. The meeting that the higher power picked off the... It was walking distance from my house, and I didn't even know if I was going to have a car when I was in Tustin. So I kept going back, and I feel comfortable there today. You know, I'm not so intimidated. And, I love learning. I didn't share when I first came to Tustin for a long time, almost 6 months, rarely ever spoke. And you know, I found out something, that if I don't share at meetings, if I listen, I get better and learn all kinds of good stuff. If I'm so consumed with what I'm going to say, then I don't have time to hear what you have to say. And I like that. And I've had so many, this last year I've had so many firsts, that so many good things happen. Here's the best. I'll end it with this. The holidays, Thanksgiving, I was having so much fun at Thanksgiving dinner that I didn't want to go to my meeting. And I'd already promised I would go. So I drug myself out of the house. And I thought, I've never had fun at a family event. That was a first. You know, I'd always wanted to, but I've always acted as if that I was having fun. This was for real. It was neat. I loved it. I went through the holidays. I did fun things. You know, I had bits and pieces of the day that sucked, but most of it was really good. Went to Disney on Ice and had a blast. That has been a goal of mine for years in these rooms. I wanted my insides to match up with my outsides. And that's happened for me this year a whole lot of times. And what a miracle that is, you know? When I got here, I was 99% of my day I did what I didn't want to do. 99%. I had about 1% that belonged to me. And in the second year, it was maybe like 95%. In that third year, I got down to 80% of my day I didn't want to do. And then 50% of my day I didn't want to do. And today, I have almost complete entire days when I'm doing what I want to do. But it's all different than stuff that I used to do. So I just kept coming back. And if you're new, just keep coming back, you know. Listen to what you want to listen to and hear what you want to hear. And if you're uncomfortable in meetings and need to jump up and go in and out, do like I did when I was new. I just count these ceiling tiles. And next thing you know, the hour's over with and you can go home. And there was a time I knew how many ceiling tiles was in every room and that I went to. And I still have occasions I do that, and it allows me to sit through an entire meeting when I'd rather be jumping up and leaving. And thank you for having me. Thank you, Mary.